Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome to The Brainstorm, episode 71. We're here together. It's our annual on-site, exciting times, FSD V13, Tasha in the studio. You wanna break it down?
Sure. Tesla started releasing the version 13 of its full self-driving software to early testers, employees. Why do we care about this? Well, of course, longer term, Tesla has plans for full autonomy. So it's another step in that direction. But it's actually quite an important step because this is the stack. So, you know, previously they were on version 12. Version 13, which should have a number of iterations, is what they plan on launching a robotaxi network with. That will be next year. What's different about this than past software launches? The biggest difference is that you can start from park, it can shift, and you can park at your destination. So basically, you're getting the features of like what is actually an end-to-end drive for the first time.
All right, Tasha, we talked to a lot of people and a lot of skeptics out there. What do you think are some of the key things that people are still skeptical of with Tesla's ability to launch? What are the answers to those questions?
That's a great question. I feel like often, to be clear, FSD right now is not perfect, right? And I don't have version 13, but on my car, you know, there's eye tracking technology. There still are interventions, is the summary point. And so I think often people say, well, okay, how are they able to launch when, you know, I still have to take over in these specific scenarios or when it doesn't work in bad weather or something? And I mean, I think a key thing that is maybe not talked about often enough is that they'll likely launch with remote operators. I mean, that's what Waymo does. Mm-hmm. That's what Cruise did. So it doesn't have to be perfect at launch. It just has to be good enough such that you can sub in this remote operator system when you need to. And of course, you know, the more you do that, the more complex it's going to be and the more costly it's going to be. So they probably want to reduce the amount of time that the remote human operators help the car.
What about the infrastructure needed to support a robotaxi business? Charging being one of it or a part of it. And then I think in the demonstration, they showed a robot cleaning the car as well. I think charging feels like more of a hurdle, especially since they're doing a new type of charging. How do you factor that in into the rollout of the robotaxi network?
Yeah, so, you know, we'll want to hear Sam's thoughts on wireless charging since we've talked about it a lot. So they unveiled wireless charging at the CyberCab event. It looks like for future scale of this service, that makes sense because then you don't need a human. The car just autonomously drives over a pad that gives it a full charge. And they unveiled like some pretty, you know, if you look at the specs of what they said, it looks like it would be a pretty impressive experience, although you won't be in the car experiencing it most likely for the robotaxi service. But I think at first they're just going to use the infrastructure that they have. Mm-hmm. So I expect this to be, you know, humans charging the car, cleaning the car. Of course, in the future, like, why not have Optimus do some of that work? But do they need that to launch in one city? Probably not. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think you leverage existing infrastructure. If you have to hire someone to plug and unplug the vehicles, that's fine. It does sound like, you know, there was an acquisition related to the wireless charging. It seems like they're going to be able to do that fairly efficiently. And obviously, we'll see that roll out. But I think the interesting thing, and we were debating this when they were talking about it, right? Because you had the snake robot that was going to plug it in. You have Optimus that could potentially plug in a vehicle or not. And this seems to be tying into the, you know, the Elon mentality of the best part is no part. And so not only is it simple and fewer moving parts that you have to deal with, but you can actually remove those elements from the vehicle itself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't have to have that charging port. Obviously, you have something else, but no more moving parts. Probably great for simplifying the vehicle, making it even cheaper.
What are the two, there's two cities they're likely to launch in next year? Which are those?
So they said that they're launching in Texas and California. Yes. You could probably guess that, okay, it's maybe like the...
Anaheim. I'm kidding.
Yeah, maybe like the Silicon Valley area broadly, and then Austin.
Do you think the initial launch and rollout will have current Tesla owners opting in their car to the service? Or do you think Tesla's going to bring in some of the inventory they have and put it out on the streets?
I think that's another good point, because I feel like that's also a point of confusion here, because Tesla talks so much about, you know, so much to the audience of owners about, well, you can sign your car up and actually you can make a good amount of money off of this service. I think that they're doing that because they want people to sign their cars up to meet peak demand. I don't think every car, you know, in the initial launch has to be a customer sign-up car. Mm-hmm. I think they can use a small fleet of their own vehicles, but customer cars supplement it. So they want to get customers excited about it because they want that supplement. You know, they want to make sure that the volume is there when they need it. But I long-term, you know, this is a fleet model. So I think there'll be third-party companies. We've heard Tesla encourage these companies to sort of come about that own the cars and operate them for Tesla. And then Tesla keeps like a small fleet to themselves.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like for a company that's so fast-paced, so fast-moving, so agile, for some reason, people, when they talk about Tesla, it's like, oh, it has to be one way and they can't change or adapt. And it's like, that's obviously not the case. They adapt and change all the time. And so, you know, will they launch with their own fleet and perfect everything? It seems like that could be possible, right? It's like they want to have a great service. Then exactly what Tasha said, you know, have other people. It's like part of Tesla's strength has been the retail support. It's like the referral program, everyone who's so excited about it. And I think this ties into another one of those points that we often hear, which is people saying, oh, I don't know if I'd put my Tesla into the fleet. And to me, that's a crazy statement, because right now there are Uber drivers sitting behind the wheel doing it. And so you're telling me those people wouldn't not sit behind the wheel and do it? It's like, that to me, that doesn't make any sense. It's like, of course, maybe, you know, VC who has a Model S Plaid isn't going to want to do that. But, you know, I'm sure the vast majority of people would gladly lease out their car for extra cash.
Yeah, and it's like, let's remember the kind of current trends that have been happening for the past decade plus. It's like fewer young people want their license, you know, ride hail has taken hold. So it's like this kind of fits in with what's, I think, been happening for a while. And I also feel like the call out to owners is somewhat a call to entrepreneurs, again, to start that fleet model. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, maybe you feel like you don't want to sign your car up, but maybe the other person sees, another person sees opportunity in this and they want to buy, you know, 30 cars or something. So I feel like that's a part of it too.
Yeah, I think that will be interesting because it's like in areas where you can set up charging and figure that out, but it's like, you know, four cities, maybe there are some, you know, very go-getter individuals who want to acquire area for charging and, you know, whether it's acquire a garage or partner with a garage and then buy 50, 500 cyber cabs and try and dominate the city. I mean, that's an exciting prospect.
And there's actually already pockets of people doing this. I know I saw on X someone in Europe has a fleet of Teslas, and this is like their exact plan when, you know, the service is available there. So I don't think it's too crazy of an idea. I think that there's already those people out there. It's just a matter of incentivizing them and you know, getting like the logistics of the proper program in place for it to work.
Does the fleet model exist in the current state of ride hail, or is it non-economical because you have a driver in the seat? Are there companies that go out?
Well, it's like Uber is the fleet.
And then just put, right. Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think of the New York City taxi medallion model, often it's like a medallion holder and then a lot of drivers. And so, or, you know, one person holds multiple medallions and that means multiple cars. So I think like it exists in history. We're in the ride hail space. Yeah. You don't quite see it operating that way today. But I mean, we saw Uber partnering with Waymo. They're going to maintain and house cars for the first time. So I think that the ride hail players are wising up to that. This is kind of the future business model. And, you know, if they don't adapt, maybe they won't be around. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're seeing the early innings of it today with what Waymo's doing.
And then just speaking of Uber and Lyft, I know Tesla has been very focused on vertical integration. We're building our own direct-to-consumer application. Do you think there's any chance that to reach the consumer, why wouldn't Tesla start on an Uber and Lyft, get people accustomed to autonomous driving, leverage Uber and Lyft, and then just break off once they've reached demand?
Well, it certainly seems like that might be Waymo's plan. Mm-hmm. Waymo started their own service, and then they decided to partner with Uber. I think one of the reasons they might have done that is because they don't have a scaled fleet. So in order to offer competitive service times to customers, they probably want to supplement, you know, a larger fleet. But the reason for Tesla not to do that, well, you know, the obvious reason for anyone for any company not to do that is sharing economics.
Right.
But, you know, we've actually published a blog that shows that Tesla's, you know, if Tesla were to launch with human drivers today, they could already undercut the cost of Uber slightly because we know from Sam's work that the operating cost of an electric vehicle is already cheaper than a gas-powered car. And, you know, Tesla has this nice verticalized structure that I think allow it a lot of advantages. So I think that because Tesla is this vertically integrated manufacturer, they're not in that Waymo position where they will have to necessarily partner. I'm not saying it's totally out of question. I just think it's unlikely. I'd be really surprised. And it's not really Tesla's style. They're more a do-it-yourself type
of company. And it ties into what Tosh was saying earlier with the drivers being able to put their cars in the fleet. So it's like you can imagine, right, there's not a steady demand of rides over the day. And so if Waymo was going to do this themselves, it's like during rush hour, how many cars would Waymo need to own to meet that demand? Because it's like you don't want to open up a Waymo app and say like, oh, you know, 17 minutes till a car gets to me, right? Then you're never opening the Waymo app again. You're just going to Uber. With Tesla and the support of drivers being able to put their vehicles into the fleet, it's like Uber doesn't solve a problem for Tesla if Tesla has that capability.
Right. Just in thinking about Uber and Lyft and what other competitive advantage, I think this applies more to Uber, but they're a full service platform. They do more than just ride hail. They have delivery. They have different segments of ride hail. Do you think about that at all? If you're operating an autonomous fleet, delivery might be hard until Optimus starts working. But I would think that maybe that gives at least more mindshare to an Uber when the consumer goes to think of a ride hail app. They're already accustomed to getting delivery from Uber Eats. That does have some sway with the consumer. Maybe price is a determining factor here, but I'm just curious how you think about it, because Tesla's going after one component, but there is other services now tied into the businesses of Uber and Lyft.
So your point is more, it's like both on kind of the customer network that Uber already has plus this full suite offering?
I think of it like in my space, you know, we have a company in terms of Spotify, right? And Spotify started just music. Now they do audiobooks, they have podcasting, and it's like a full service audio platform. That's what Uber and Lyft and some of these other services are going after. And that to me is a moat that is really hard to break once you have the full suite of services on one platform. So if there were a company today that were to come out with a streaming service and they just did music, I wouldn't even think about it until they had everything Spotify had to offer, if that makes sense. I know it's not applicable, but there's some analogy there, maybe.
Well, I think when I do think it's like Uber Eats and Lyft and Lyft and DoorDash are partners. It's like the delivery side, I think, is complex. And I think this is also why people, so many people say like, oh, like Uber's a difficult business to run. Like, it's not going to be so easy for Tesla to just do it. And I think that's because Uber is doing so much. I think Tesla can run a robo-taxi service much more simply than people expect, right? Interfacing with restaurants and all of that stuff, you know, I don't think that's the lowest hanging fruit for Tesla to tackle day one. But if all of a sudden the delivery cost, because you don't have a driver, is that much lower, then, you know, I think you can erode that moat fairly well.
I think a couple of things. Like, one, it depends on the market. We know that, like, if you're an Asian consumer, you might be accustomed to like these super apps, and the user behavior there might be different, right? So, you know, there could be different considerations for different markets, but I think the U.S. is actually the most important market for ride hail because of the price ceiling that we have versus, you know, in China it costs maybe 30 cents per mile equivalent. Here, $2 a mile. It means, you know, makes for a much more profitable service if you're launching here for robotaxis. Cruise had originally planned to integrate some kind of delivery into their, future service with RideHail. I think they were doing that because they didn't have great utilization rates. And again, that was a fleet size issue from my perspective. So if Tesla is a vertically integrated manufacturer, which they are, you know, they won't have that. That presumably might not be a problem for them. I think, you know, Uber's main asset today is their drivers, which is going away. I think routing is difficult, but, you know, like the hardest parts of routing are like incentivizing the drivers to be in the right places. And you don't have to do that when the cars are robots.
That's a great point.
And then the last thing I'll say is, you know, a big part of our thesis on delivery. So one, I'll point out Tesla actually has a lot of the components of delivery. They have the semi truck. They unveiled the other vehicle that fits multiple passengers at the Cybercab event. You could imagine that could be for cargo as well if they took out the seats. And then for last mile delivery, a drone might make a lot more sense. And then, you know, Zipline, which is in our venture portfolio, they say this all the time. Like, why would you use something that, you know, is like a multi-ton vehicle to deliver something that's like a pound?
You got to protect the burrito at all costs.
But it's, you know, it's an inefficient system today. Delivery's so expensive. It doubles the price of the meal roughly in the US. So I think that you can do that a lot cheaper with a like custom built form factor. So that might just be a different system entirely for last mile.
Yeah. I do love delivery though. I will say I'm totally addicted.
To delivery.
I realized one night when you go to a hotel, you get room service. These delivery apps, it's basically just room service for the entire world. And once that sunk in with me, I was like, I love it.
Well, this gets into a whole separate topic. And you can look at the trends, right? The food away from home versus food at home spending. But maybe we'll circle back, post our big ideas. Yeah. Deck and talk.
We don't need to go down this tangent today.
Tasha, maybe to wrap it up, in our Tesla model, when do we have them commercializing? And do the recent advancements change how you think about that? It doesn't need to be an official, you know, this is a changing of what we say, but just how you're thinking about it.
Yes. So we had 60-40% of our simulations, because it's a Monte Carlo model. So like 60% of the time, roughly 40, and then a very long tail in the other years. We had them launching either in 2025 or 2026. So it's actually, it's roughly, it's in line with kind of what we expected that they could do. You know, the real question with any of these players is, okay, they're launching, but what scale do they get to? And again, I think that that's like, that's the interesting part about Tesla, with the data advantage, the manufacturer advantage that they have, that the scale that we could see from them versus a Waymo, I think could surprise to the upside. And so I'm excited for the next year. I think it'll be particularly like for the average street analyst that sort of has to model this now, but still has a lot of doubts about it. I feel like once you see it with your own eyes, you know, I hope that it sort of like puts some of those people over the cusp, because we believe that it's happening. So.
Right. And you said sell side. It's like even now we're starting to see upgrades, but not necessarily modeling on a per mile basis versus FSD attach. And so it seems like that's that next wave of model adaptation.
Exactly. It's a totally different business model, robotaxi services versus selling the full self-driving software. And I mean, we think it's going to be much more profitable. That's going to be almost 90% of the enterprise value of the company over the next 5 years, according to our published model. So I think that that's a really important distinction. And again, just getting everyone to wrap their heads around what that service looks like and what the logistics are like, I think a lot of questions are going to be answered in the next year.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. And next one, maybe we'll do it on the road in a car.
We'll try to get our hands on FSD version 13.
All
right.